This is True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup.
Doing the second look for the wedding and stuff, it was just like, it was a huge responsibility. You know, I felt the weight of the world on my shoulders for that because it was such a big, it's like almost the Oscars of hairdressing, I would describe it. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't get kind of better than that.
Hello and welcome to True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup. In this series of podcasts from Harrods, I'm talking to people at the top of the creative industries about their work and their relationship to luxury. Most of my guests in this series are designers or creators of beautiful products. But today I'm meeting someone rather different. This week my guest is a hairdresser, but he's no ordinary hairstylist. This is George Northwood. Very occasionally, there have been women whose hair everybody wants to have. Mary Quant in the 60s, Jennifer Aniston in the 90s, and those haircuts came to define their times. In noughties Britain, it was Alexa Chung and her relaxed but polished and impeccably cool hairstyle that redefined what women wanted to look like. George Northwood created that cut, and he's gone on to work with many other women in the public eye. He's now the Duchess of Sussex's favourite hairdresser. His own salon in London is a testament to his philosophy of functional luxury, relaxed and welcoming, but beautiful and tinged with glamour and fabulousness. George, first of all, obviously, you know, it's really, really a stress-making experience to prepare for today's interview because I couldn't get to the hairdresser to have my hair done. And so this is just very much as I do it myself, okay. Which is not very good.
I was going to say it looks quite good.
But do you look, what's the first thing you look at when you look at people? Is it their hair?
It's actually surprisingly not. I get this asked this question a lot. They say, oh, you're always looking at people's hair. And actually, I don't. As soon as I step outside of the salon, I'm not really paying that much attention to people's hair. As crazy as that may sound. If you then ask me, I'll kind of go into hairdresser mode.
And when did you, because, you know, there's lots about, you know, your new salon and out there, but I feel like there's a long gap of your life that I don't know about. So okay. I'm going to ask you to talk me
sure.
through a bit of it. So
okay.
maybe we could start when you were a kid. Where did you grow up and when did you first start being interested in hairdressing as a career?
I grew up in Luton, sunny Luton, just north of London. Hairdressing started for me because my grandmother was a hairdresser and she used to do mobile hairdressing. And so my earliest memories are my grandmother, I called her Nana. She was in Luton and she used to do home delivery hair services. So she'd go around to all these like other older ladies, those hair she did. And then it was all about perms. It wasn't about colouring. And so I just felt she had this wonderful life. One day she'd go to Mrs. Wilshire's, the next day she'd go to Mrs. Elliott's, and she'd basically just go there, they'd drink tea, she'd do their hair, and she'd pocket the cash. And I just thought, what a great way to live. I mean, I was only a small child at this stage. I always say I kind of grew up with the smell of perm lotion. It didn't really feel like a job. It just felt like, you know, she was just having a nice life. I just felt like my nan's life was socialising with her friends, playing with their hair, and making money. And then my mum, I always remember when my mum had her hairdresser over and she had home hairdressing, because then it was a lot about home hairdressing, I think. I don't know, probably still a bit more in the suburbs. And whenever my mum's hairdresser would come, I'd sort of sit there and I'd kind of join in the conversation. And I was really into, again, being around it. I just loved joining in the chat and the conversation. And again, just thought, this is a great job. You go round to people's houses and, you know, and I always find it's really funny that she did this amazing hairstyle on my mum that looked great on the day that she did it. My mum, bless her, spent the other 5 weeks and 6 days trying to make herself look the same with every tool under the sun and never looked like that ever again.
That's the story of my life.
Yeah, it's true. I think that's the thing. I think people's biggest fear is, how am I going to make this look like this at home?
Do you think that's why, I mean, I'm looping ahead and then I'll probably go backwards again, but do you think that that's why you've become famous for the sort of undone look? And of course it is now, you know, quite a sort of a fashionable approach to hair. You know, you don't want it to look like you've had a perm and a set.
Totally.
But do you think part of it was, you know, thinking about your poor mum and her trying to recreate this style for weeks on end, that you thought you would alleviate women of that misery by giving them a style that they could possibly create themselves?
Totally. Actually, you've hit the nail on the head. That's kind of exactly what happened. I grew up seeing my mum battle to get this haircut to look like it was styled on the day. It was like a big blow dry with lots of mousse. And I kind of thought, yeah, like this is, we need to cut hair in a more, in a way. I mean, luckily trends have moved more towards that more undone, messy, textured hair. I guess I was kind of following that with a, in a subconscious way. And I very much strive to give women hair, or we as a team strive to give women hair that they can manage at home and cut it in a way that you don't have to spend a your whole time trying to make it look a certain way. It just falls in a certain way. But hair back then was always very about sort of certain club cutting and big blow dries. It was all about high maintenance hair, wasn't it? It was like you wanted to look like you just stepped out of a salon. That was the look.
In a way, that was what you were paying for, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You were paying for something that looked structural.
Yes. Yeah, and that was the whole art of it. And you can't really achieve this at home because we're the hairdressers. Do you know what I mean? It was that kind of...
I wonder if... you know, kids growing up now, they won't even have that, which I find rather nostalgic scent of, you know, perm lotion in the salon in their nostrils, will they?
No.
You know, I know there's rather grumpy ladies sitting with lavender hair. Lavender, yes. That's gone. Well, actually, that might be coming back a bit.
Yeah, it can. It is actually. You're seeing a lot of these sort of pastel colours at the moment. Yeah, it's kind of come back a bit, but not in the same way. Or even when I first moved to London, I were, you know, it was working in a salon where women would come in for a weekly blow dry. There still is, it's a dying breed, but there's still those women that come in and wouldn't even ever blow dry their own hair. It would be like backcombed and you almost slept upright for a week. And that would be your, you know, but then we moved to like haircuts that kind of could have a blow dry, and you did blow dry it yourself, but you never made it look the same. And now I think it's more about haircuts that work, look a bit more undone, and you can do it yourself. And in fact, now they even look better when they're not done. Like a lot of the time I say to clients, your hair's going to look much better when you just let it dry naturally. I'm just going to try and make it look cool now, but actually the real magic is when you just let it dry naturally.
But do you not think that that's something that changes as you get older as well? I mean, I used to very happily have kind of just got out of bed, tousled hair, you know, that looked like I'd been up all night, and sometimes I had been up all night. But if I try that now in my 50s, you know, I look like an old Harridan. I look like I need to be sent back home for my own safety. No. You know.
Yeah, I think the undone sort of philosophy or the way of styling hair and that kind of movement, as it were, is just, it's good for any age. But I think as you do get older, I think there's a more importance for a good haircut. You can still wear it slightly messy, like I think your hair today looks...
pretty messy.
Your words are mine. No, I think it looks cool. It looks textured. I'm going to give it better words than that. But it looks textured. It's got a undone feel to it. But you can tell it's got a good haircut underneath.
So going back again, you decided to become a hairdresser. Was it a decision like that? Or did you just get a job at the weekends?
I went to drama school first and then somehow realised I didn't want to do any of that sort of stuff. And then I went into hotel management to earn money. When I was young, I was obsessed with hairdressing because I saw my nan and my mum's hairdresser. So I used to open a salon in my loft, in my parents', and I used to be perming all the girls in the street. They used to take them in the loft, and I used to perm all their hair on rods. It was actually with water, so it never would set, but it was like I played hair salons. Crazy. I had these pink rollers. It was crazy.
Did you have satisfied clients?
No, not really. No, I did. Well, it was part of the fun. It was just like playing hairdressers, I guess. And my mum and dad were great because they just kind of let us run free with whatever we wanted to do. And I suppose
you have brothers and sisters.
Yeah. I've got a sister that's also a colourist, actually. And so she was less into it when she was young, but I think she grew up subconsciously around it, and she got it into hairdressing even before I did. But I definitely remember opening this salon and always playing with my mum's hair when she was watching TV, braiding her hair. But then I got distracted and did the drama school and the hotel management thing. And then finally, when I was working in a bar, one of the girls that were working in the bar as managing, she was lecturing college, hairdressing at a college nearby. I kind of was bored with hotel management. It wasn't creative enough. I didn't want to be an actor. I said to her, I really want to do hairdressing. I remember when I was young, I was so into it. Played salons in the loft and, you know, all of that stuff. And she says, why don't I give you some one-on-one lessons? And I went to her house and I really remember the moment, and she kind of got me doing bits and bobs on, like a when you're training, you do it on like a doll's head, like a girl's world, I suppose.
Or your neighbours.
Or your neighbours, or anyone that will let you free on their hair. I've wrecked some people's hair as well in the early stages when I wasn't even qualified, obviously.
You can say sorry now if you want.
Sorry, yeah, Suzanne, for making you look like a boy. I'm ruining your childhood. We're still best of friends, so it's great. Yeah, so...
So she started giving you these one-on-one sessions.
She gave me these one-on-one sessions, which were brilliant. She said I was a natural. Then I went to college. Then I moved to Bristol. And then a friend offered me a job drunk in a bar. She had a salon. I took her up on the offer, went in. We're still best of friends now. And she let me loose on people very quickly. And a lot more before I was actually technically ready, which kind of gave me a confidence. And I was working very freehand. And it kind of all just grew from there. It happened very quickly. I kind of went from hotels into hairdressing pretty much overnight, it seems.
Perhaps the fact that you weren't overtrained, shall we say, to keep it polite, like you were about my hair. perhaps because you weren't overtrained, you had a freedom that lots of people who had been sort of drilled into hairdressing might not have had, you know, which might explain your approach to hair in a way, or your inspiration.
Yeah, I would say that was a big part of it. I always say that going in it that way round and being very, I was very confident with it, and I knew how I wanted to sculpt hair, but I didn't know the textbook rules first. So I kind of broke the rules and then learnt the rules.
Do you think, though, that there's also something more to hairdressing than just being able to do hair? Because to me, as a woman, it's a very important experience in my day-to-day life. And, I mean, my dream is never to have to wash my own hair ever again. You know, if I could just have someone else do it, perhaps more often than weekly. But, you know, often if you have a hairdresser that you go to a lot, you talk to them once a week, maybe, or once a month even.
Yep.
But, you know, for years and years. And so there's all kinds of different aspects to being a hairdresser.
Totally. The skill of it, but also what I feel has made, what's made me good at what I do, is an ability to sort of read people quite well. A lot of people don't say what they actually mean, or they can't articulate what they want. So it's being able to sort of read between the lines. And, you know, I grew up around a lot of women and a lot of girls. Most of my clientele are women. So, you know, I think from a young age, I kind of got an understanding of women quite well. And I think that's kind of helped. It's a relationship you kind of have to work at. It's like, you know, come back and see me now, let's do this, evolving it, suggesting, because I always say, if you don't change your clients, they'll change you. It's the same with any relationship. If you don't work at it, it gets stale, and then you lose interest. So it's so much more than just cutting hair.
I think you also have to be able to understand someone's personality very, very quickly, because, you know, you can go, 5 minutes maximum chat, surely, before you start cutting someone's hair that you've never met before.
Yeah.
And so you have to know if they're the sort of person that's going to like it neat and structural, or messy and unkempt,
totally,
or curly and frisky. Or, you know, how do you do that? How do you?
My consultation process is very to the point, in the sense that I say, what's their own routine of care? How do they manage their own hair? So I want to know what do they do in the mornings? How much time they have to dedicate to their hair? A little bit about what their natural texture is, what sort of products they like to use. I try and keep it really simple. I try not to overload it with technical hairdressing chat, like graduation, which people just don't understand, and over directing and stuff. I just sort of say, show me how you like it, bring pictures. There's a real taboo about taking pictures to a hairdresser.
Yeah.
When people bring a picture, they're like, I'm sorry, I know you don't like that, but that's actually a bit of a myth. I think the client feels that there's an issue with bringing in visual references, but I'm announcing it here to people around wherever who's listening, that you can bring visual references in. We like that, because I need to get inside your head. I remember when I was young and I'd go into a salon and I'd get myself worked up before, thinking, right, I need to say that this is what I want, because I was quite particular with my own hair. And I'd have this kind of checklist of everything I wanted to say. And then as soon as I sat down and they asked, what do you want? By the time I'd be at the backwash, I thought, well, I just didn't explain anything about what I wanted to look. And then I feel like, you can't go back in the chair and change your mind, because that's not allowed either. And it's like, I do really remember being being the client and on that side of things. So try to do all the things that I would want as a client, as a particular, very particular about my hair client, which I was then.
So how many times have people slipped an Alexa Chung picture under your nose and said, I want it like that?
So many, absolutely loads. I mean, it's still, it's a huge haircut and it's one of the most requested haircuts, I believe. Like it's one of the top searched things on Pinterest, Alexa Fringe. The two of us, we have such great chemistry and there's such a sort of a long-term relationship there. But even from the start, we're very much on the same page. And it was a great collaboration of personalities. And I wanted to sort of experiment with hair. She wasn't afraid to sort of do things a bit differently, whatever. And that bob that we cut was just a real moment of change. It was like, here's a girl that's cut her hair short, shortish for then, because everyone had long hair really until then. She's wearing it messy and textured and she looks really feminine. So it was like a thumbs up for shorter hair and femininity and the beginning of textured sort of hair being cool, as it were.
At what point did you realise that you'd created something iconic, not just a cut?
When the phones just kept ringing and there was a point where I was just like back-to-back girls just coming in for this Alexa bob and it was crazy. I still see in the salon now people showing pictures. I laugh about this with Alexa, is no matter what we do with her hair, people always think it's a bob. Like we can grow it long and people are like, can I have the Alexa bob? It's like, she doesn't actually have a bob anymore. But I think it was just such a, people really identify with it so much as that moment.
What about if people won't suit it? But they want it. What do you do then?
Well, actually, this is the beauty of it, is that it actually suits everyone because it's soft. So whether you've got sort of softer features or harder features, a soft haircut is fine.
I mean, you've got a long list of glamorous, well-known celebrity clients, you know, model Rosie Huntington-Whiteley is one of them. Mm. But I just wondered how important you think that is to your business as a hairdresser. You know, where were you before Alexa and how much did that impact on your business and how do you sustain that, I suppose?
Where I was before is I was just cutting every Tom, Dick and Harry I could find.
You didn't have your own salon then?
No, I didn't. I worked at Hirschesson then. And I mean, and this is a big piece of advice is that when I was first starting out, I was set loose doing all the models from, say, Storm Modeling Agency and Profile Modeling Agency. And it was, the deal was they come in and got their hair done for free and graduate stylists like me got to do haircuts. I mean, it's a fully qualified hairdresser, but I just was just starting off the block. So, you know, and it was great because they could be a bit experimental. It would give me time to practice my skills and everyone's a winner. So I was doing all of these kind of models and a lot of people like, no, I don't want to do these models, you know, like what's the point, you know, not earning any money. And I was like, no, I want to do them. And it was this kind of, I think it's really important to say yes to everything when you're young and experimenting, you know, when you're starting out in a career is that, you know, say yes, do everything that comes your way. And it's kind of later on, you kind of learn to say no to things, you come a bit more specific. So I really got to do those two, Alexa and Rosie, just because they were two of the models that I was doing. So before that, I was just very up for anything. And I think that's the fate part of it, is that because I was saying yes to so much, eventually something that was a bit of a break, those two popped. They were talking about me being their hairdresser. And this was kind of even before social media. So this was just them talking in press on like style files about who's your hairdresser, because there was no like selfies and stuff with me and my stylist. I think what's great about it is that people do want to look like celebrities. So it is quite an important thing. I feel great because the girls that I've worked with are very much my signature style of working, I think. And then people have looked to them and that's what's grown my profile. And, you know, you do a couple of celebrities and then, or, you know, movers and shakers, and then they send their friends. And it's like the same with everyone. You get into circles of people and then it just grows. And it's really amazing. I didn't set out for it to become what it has. I set out just very hungry for doing really well in whatever I was doing, I suppose.
And I guess that, you know, what happened with Alexa was pretty spectacular in terms of, you know, the quantity of people who responded and wanted the Alexa Bob.
Yeah.
But I guess now that you're working with the Duchess of Sussex, that sort of takes it up another notch, doesn't it? Because that's on a global level. You know, she's become so quickly an iconic figure worldwide. And there you are, stepping off the plane with the scissors at the ready.
It's just such an honour. That's how it feels. And yeah, it's amazing to be doing it. And I kind of cherish every moment of it.
Did she just walk in off the street?
No. Again, I think down to my word of mouth, building up a good reputation. I like to think I've always worked in a very kind of slick and discreet manner. And I give it my everything as if it were my first time. I never kind of become complacent. I want to do the best I can.
How do you manage to keep your enthusiasm up? I mean, it must get to a point where you just think, oh, no, not hair again.
I spend a lot of time nurturing myself. I have a lot of very quiet weekends, and I do a lot of yoga and meditation and that sort of stuff. And every so often I'll get to a point where I know I've got to go away and just completely switch off. So yeah, I've had times where I've completely burnt out and just had to like stop for a bit, you know?
I'm not going to flog the horse too much, but I did wonder how it felt to be creating Meghan's hair for what you knew would be a moment in history that would be watched by everyone in the world. Did it feel like a huge responsibility, and did you know what you wanted to do? I mean, how
That was doing the second look for the wedding and stuff. It was just like, it was a huge responsibility. You know, I felt the weight of the world on my shoulders for that. It's like almost the Oscars of hairdressing, I would describe it. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't get better than that. And I got myself really worked up about it, but I didn't show it to anyone, obviously, being like Mr. Cool. I kind of do thrive off that a bit. I've always kind of put myself outside my comfort zone and challenged myself. I'm quite good at that, as much as I hate it at the time. And I'm like, why am I doing this? It was a phenomenal experience, and it was something that I really psyched myself up for.
Because you did the hair for the evening, for the party.
Yeah, for the party, for the second look. You know, it was just a bit more relaxed. It was nice, and it was kind of what I'm kind of known for doing. But, you know, I still very much got myself worked up. And
What happens when you get worked up?
I probably don't sleep as well as I normally do. I don't remember anything. Like, I'll take some vitamins and then 5 minutes, I better take my vitamins. Well, have I already done that or not? Like, it's like I've got complete amnesia as to what I'm doing in my own sort of life, if you get what I mean. So that kind of happens a little bit.
Do you think she was aware of how nervous you were?
No. And I think that's all part of the training in you, bringing your A game and being very professional, but being able to sort of contain your nerves, I think, is all part of it. And like anyone that kind of does anything that's a big deal, I did Alicia for the Oscars, which was a huge big thing for me as well. And, you know, I've done a few things for the Met Ball, and, you know, which is another big gig that happens in hairdressing. And I've kind of done a lot. And even when I just used to start on red carpet, like when I first started out, like working with the likes of like Julianne Moore, I was like, oh my God, like this is Julianne Moore. What am I going to do? Like, you know, so Gwyneth Paltrow, that was another, you know, those kind of A-list kind of Hollywood sort of women or American women as well. Like, I was quite young, and when I first started working with them, and that all came off the back of sort of Rosie and Alexa. So I've had a lot of practice at getting myself psyched up, and actually the nerves is all part of it. I think the minute I'm not nervous and the minute I'm not a bit of a wreck before I do something huge, then that's kind of game over. I think I should maybe just go and do something completely different. It's going to freak me out in another way.
What about the salon? Because it sounds like, you know, we started out this conversation talking about sort of ladies sitting having their hair permed, and they would have all day to while away and would be very happy if it took 3 or 4 hours because they could sort of sit there and flick through magazines. And the world has changed a lot. They want the best hair they can have, but they want to get in and out of the hairdressers as fast as possible. But they still want it to be a pleasurable experience, a pleasurable part of their routine. So how do you create that? Because you've now got your own salon.
Yep.
And so creating the atmosphere must have been a big part of what you thought about.
Totally. And it's really interesting you say that very much the modern day woman, the biggest luxury she has, or people in general, but I say women because the salon caters to more women than men, I would say, but, you know, everyone's welcome.
And we're nicer there, women, obviously.
Obviously. But no, you know, we do, you know, it's a... but really, it's those women that would spend back in the day hours in the salon and, you know, it would become a thing. But now women are working as much as men. It was very much in my mind that I wanted to create an environment that it's, I call it kind of functional luxury. So that kind of old luxury thing is a bit done now, that kind of chandeliers, 2 hours here, two, you know, the most valuable thing anyone has is time. So I wanted to create a very inspirational space, great interiors. We work very quick, but we're very thorough. The salon is beautiful, but it's not chandeliers. It's a pampering, but it's a very, it's in a modern way. It's very efficient. It's a bit New York, do I say, in that sort of time. It's like, you know, when you go to New York, the service is great and it's not, there's no frills, but it's just really great service. And we're kind of really focused on that. Great drinks, great coffee.
I was going to ask, is it like biscuits or protein balls? Because I know your mum makes some of the snacks.
My mum makes the shortbread that's delivered weekly. She brings it up on a weekly basis, bless her. And it's so sweet. And my mum is just such a, oh God, I've got this member of staff that's gluten-free, can't eat dairy, eggs, can't eat anything. And my mum knows this, and it was her birthday yesterday. My mum made this cake that was free of everything for her and brought it in, and it was just, like, so delightful. And it's just, like, my mum's such a big part of, like, that sort of family feel, and obviously my sister upstairs as well. But
because she works with you now, your sister, doesn't she?
Sally works in colour upstairs, yes. It's good. It's got that real family feel, which is really nice. We actually give macaroons away, so we appreciate, we might be trendy, but we still know that people love sugar, as untrendy as sugar is.
Is your mum incredibly proud of you?
She is. She really is.
What was her proudest moment, do you think?
Opening the salon was a real sort of proud moment for her, seeing it come to life, what I went through, the stress, blood, sweat and tears to bring the salon to life. And obviously, yeah, I think that, like, the royal wedding is such a huge thing because, you know, especially like my nan that was the hairdresser that, you know, inspired me. Sadly, she'd passed away quite a few years ago. So she was a real royalist, you know. And so for her, that would have been such a, you know, and I think for my mum, just sort of thinking what her mum and my mum herself, very proud of that moment. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Sure. I wondered what the biggest mistake women make with their hair is. Do people have unrealistic expectations? You know, I mean, if I came to you and said, I'd like to have an afro.
Yes.
Do me an afro?
I could have a go. Yeah, I could give it a go. Sometimes the biggest mistake people think is that you not everything is possible, if you get what I mean. So it's like, it's about being prepared to compromise. You know, sometimes you bring a picture and it's of this completely different hair type to what they have. And the one thing you can't change is the type of hair that you've been given. So I just think sometimes be flexible with what you kind of want and work with your stylist on it. But I think the biggest thing is don't be afraid of your hair. Like, don't be afraid to experiment. Most people, women in particular, they feel like they're the expert of their own makeup, but they're the worst person with their own hair. So kind of, I would like to see people bring in some of that confidence with their own makeup into their hair and kind of feel more confident about it. I think a lot of people don't feel very empowered when it comes to their own hair. I'd like to sort of provide as much sort of education and stuff as I can so that people feel like they're not scared of their hair, if you get what I mean.
No, that's really interesting. It's really true. You know, when you think about every single one of my girlfriends, you know, they know how to do their own makeup better than anyone else. And even the ones that might have a makeup artist or something will then correct whatever the makeup artist is doing. But when it comes to hair, I mean, I think it took me 35 years to feel like, okay, I can just do it to go out.
Yeah,
you know.
But now
normally,
you feel quite confident?
No, not that confident, to be honest. And as we've pointed out, my own styling is
tips.
Not great. Yeah, I need some top. That's what I'm asking for, top tips, but for our listeners as well.
Okay, yeah. Tips are, don't be afraid. Just experiment with your own hair. Styling products are really good. Like, there's so much information out there online, tips and stuff. That's a great thing with the whole social media thing. There's so much education online. If you want to learn to do a tongue on your hair, Google it. You know what I mean? All those sorts of things. Dry shampoo is a great thing. It's one of the biggest kind of products that seem to have emerged sort of in the last sort of few years.
But you think of it as old-fashioned, don't you?
Yeah,
in a way,
but no, it's great. And I use dry shampoo even on dry hair as like a texturizer, or clean hair, I mean. Don't wash your hair all the time unless you really feel like you need to every day. Don't be afraid to experiment. try some different styles. Your hairdresser should be taking you on a journey and experimenting and changing. And if they're not, you know,
get rid of them.
Try someone
else. And go
and
see George. Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes in our salon, a lot of the time, people will move around a little bit and people get very like, well, I want to see this person, but I might upset this person. And I'm like, don't worry about it. We're all friends in here. We all understand that sometimes clients like to move around. So we kind of encourage it a little bit because we all kind of work the same, but we are different as
and
well.
And it gives you a bit of a break, doesn't it? From the endless chatter.
Yeah.
Do you ever get tired of listening to people tell you their intimate secrets?
Yeah, I quite like that part of it, I have to say. It's quite fun. Please don't think you've got to bring pictures or not and you've got to chat or not. Just be yourself. And like, you know, that's what I say.
One last technical question, purely from my own self, which is that, you know, an awful lot of products are heat related, aren't they? You know, to do with blow drying your hair.
Yes.
And if I don't want to blow dry my hair because I don't do it very well, how do you stop it being frizzy if you don't blow dry it?
Have you got a good defrizzing product?
I don't know.
You need to buy, you need to find your product. You need to find a product. There's so many products out there that are for like anti-frizz. You remember back in the day, like the frizzies, that John Frieda product.
Yeah,
you
but there were all those jelly things and they all make it go lank. And
so, you know, that maybe that's not right for you, but you know, you just need to find like a great defrizzing sort of product. I use one from Pureology that I think is really good. It's like a super smoothing balm and it's just like a very clear soft gel. But you need to find your product. But if you don't want frizz, let it dry naturally and don't touch it and don't really comb it. So wash the hair, condition it, towel dry it, comb it through once if you like, but then scrunch it or style it into how you want it to be and just leave it alone. The more you play around with your hair and disturb it, the more it will frizz up. So less is more.
A whole new me, less is more.
Not just about sort of having like undone texture, it's about actually just undoing your routine. Like less is more. That's what I think.
Two of the sort of hairdressing giants, I suppose, the ones that people would have heard of, you know, over the decades, like Vidal Sassoon and maybe John Frieda, who's now got all these. So is that your ambition in the end, to become a major conglomerate hair salon producing products, et cetera, et cetera, and then retire perhaps to the south of France and just put your feet up?
Oh, God, that sounds nice. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I mean, they're huge sort of inspirations to me, those people, Vidal Sassoon and John Frieda. And I would be more than happy to become like an authority on hair like they are over
hair
time.
Hair magnet.
Hair magnet. But, you know, I think I've got a few more, a few more years to go, but we'll see how it goes.
A few more bobs to do.
A few more
meantime.
Bobs to cut. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Now, but I know that, you know, for women, a lot of women, the whole hair business is a luxury, but you've brought along something today that you think of as a supreme luxury item. What is it?
Okay, yes. I brought two things, but I can't decide what. Can I do both?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Well, number one, I brought my Rolex, which is the first luxury item I've ever really bought. And it's really sweet because I just turned 40 and all my friends and family clubbed together because they kind of knew I wanted one. And they got me a Rolex made on the year that I was born.
That's so
How
sweet.
How nice is that? I mean, I did hint that I would like a watch.
Quite heavily.
And this is like the first like real luxury thing. Like obviously I've been an idiot and spent like way too much on clothes and stuff in the past, which is great and I've loved. But this is the first like proper luxury item. And then the other thing was, it's not really a luxury item, but it's a luxury. I brought my piano certificates because my piano is my luxury. And I used to play the piano when I was young for 10 years, well, even longer. And I've just got my piano back into my flat and I had my first piano lesson last night. So my other luxury item would be my piano. And I bought my piano certificates with me because I didn't think I'd get my piano in the lift.
I think they're both fantastic choices. My last question is going to be, if we let you loose in Harrods, where you'd head for, but maybe it's the piano department.
It could be. No, I've planned this out. I would have to go because I've heard it's really amazing. I would go to the luggage department. I travel so much for work. I know that the luggage department here is out of this world. And I would go and get myself some really nice cases and luggage. I'd get a whole set of something really, really nice, like Globetrotter, the whole shebang, or do you know what I mean? And I would kit myself up so I could travel around the world in style. That would be my thing.
I wish I could grant it.
Oh,
thank you so much, George.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup, and my guest, George Northwood. This podcast was recorded in Harrods in London.